From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, it's Tuesday, and this is Washington Watch. This is Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here, filling in for Tony Perkins, our president. President Trump tonight will be delivering his first Oval Office address at 9 p.m. and visiting the southern border on Thursday as he tries to put pressure on resistant Democrats to approve the $5.7 billion he wants for the border wall. Joining me at the top of the hour is Republican Congressman Brian Babin of Texas, who just visited the border on January and will share his insights with us. In our second block, I'll talk about the surprising court ruling siding with Christian baker Jack Phillips of Colorado. Yes, that Jack Phillips, who refused to create a cake that was celebrating transgenderism, despite a June 2018 Supreme Court ruling on his behalf. The Colorado Civil Rights Commission continues to harass him. Jim Campbell, Alliance Defending Freedom's senior counsel, joins me to discuss. At 32 past the hour, I'll discuss a fascinating column from the Wall Street Journal yesterday, which questioned how quickly the medical community affirms teens who have so-called rapid-onset gender dysphoria. Dr. Michelle Cretella, Vice President of the American College of Pediatricians, joins me. And in our last segment, we'll talk about a recent Gallup poll indicating that more Democrats favor socialism today than capitalism. Marion Smith, Executive Director of Victims of Communism Foundation, joins me to discuss.
I just saw a poll, 75% that immigration is so important. And it is. It's a very big issue. I may declare a national emergency dependent on what's going to happen over the next few days.
Well, we are in day 18 of the governmental shutdown for lack of funding related to border security and construction of a $5.7 billion structure. So Trump tonight is delivering his first Oval Office address at 9 p.m. and visiting the southern border to see for himself on Thursday while he puts pressure on resistant Democrats to approve the package. Only then will he agree to end the government shutdown, now in its 18th day. So joining me on the Washington Watch hotline is Congressman Brian Babin, who represents the 36th Congressional District of Texas. He serves on the House Transport and Infrastructure Committee and the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. Congressman, welcome.
Hey, thank you, Sarah. Great to be with you.
So we opened our segment today with Trump's comments on the fact that he might utilize a crisis classification to effect order on this and to get through Congress what he needs to get through. So having just visited the southern border on January 6th and after meeting face-to-face with border agents, can you give us a sense of whether or not that's an appropriate designation?
It is a very, very appropriate designation. We have a humanitarian crisis. We also have a national security crisis down there. And it is absolutely necessary that we do not continue to fund this at just status quo amounts. This is not a status quo emergency. This is something that is absolutely unprecedented. And not only from a health care standpoint, but public services, overwhelming our federal employees down there. My heart goes out to these men and women who are on the border, and quite frankly, also to the landowners, the ranchers down there, and local law enforcement. This is an unprecedented crisis, and for some reason, I can only speculate that the Democrats do not want to listen. It was obvious at last week when the Secretary Nielsen of DHS was wanting to brief with facts and figures Democratic leaders, and they just refused to hear it. Mm-hmm. And we've also heard that following the president's address tonight, which I'm so glad to hear, he needs to take this directly to the American people so that they can know what the facts are on the border. And we've had like Gerald Nadler and other Democrats are saying that he doesn't expect the president to tell the truth. Well, these are absolute facts and figures coming from our Border Patrol and from ICE, and these are not made up stories. So We're looking forward to hearing what the president has to say to set the American people straight. And I can tell you from experience, not only was I down there this past week in the South Texas border, in three different counties, as a matter of fact, I was down there in Maverick, Webb, and Dimmitt counties. Last October, I visited the border in San Diego, California. I saw all of the prototypes of the wall, and I can tell you that there's some really good ones in there, and we desperately need this. And in fact, let me just say this too, Sarah. If walls don't work, then I would just say I'd ask Speaker Pelosi to tear the one down around her house because she has a wall around her house. And walls do work. There's a wall up in Israel, which I have also visited, and it is highly effective, 99% effective.
You know, it's interesting because you mentioned walls and Speaker Pelosi specifically, and I have to tell you, I loved your tweet that said if Speaker Pelosi thinks border security walls are immoral, then why doesn't she sponsor legislation to take down the wall between San Diego and Tijuana? I'm assuming you haven't yet received a response to that question.
I have not received a response. Perhaps in their equal time, quote unquote, that they're supposed to get tonight, maybe we'll find out. But walls are not immoral. Walls are there for a purpose. Fences, walls, barriers, they make good neighbors. And we're a sovereign nation, Sarah. And without sovereignty and without a secure border, we are risking our country in a way that I have never, ever seen before. I mean, some of the figures are just unbelievable. We've arrested 17,000 criminals coming across the border just this past year. We have had 235,000 criminals arrested. These are alien criminals on the interior of the United States, and we're receiving 60,000 illegal immigrants coming in per day on the southern border. And here's another one. 135,000 families came in the year 2017, and only in less than 2% were able to be sent back home because of the loopholes and the shortage of resources on the infrastructure down there. And we're trying to make our Border Patrol agents and ICE into daycare centers and babysitters, and they are not equipped to do that. And the Democrats have to realize, as I said earlier, that this is not a status quo situation. We cannot continue to fund this at status quo levels. And quite frankly, these Democrats have changed their tune because earlier in years past, they have voted for fencing and for walls at much higher amounts of funding than the $5.7 billion that the president is asking for and the House of Representatives has voted on. This is a situation that is putting every American in this country at risk.
I'm glad you actually mentioned that, because I don't think that's a statistic that most of our listeners are familiar with. But under President Obama, all 54 Democrats in the House voted to double the length of a new border fence with Mexico at a tune of $40 billion for national security. So, again, much more expensive, much longer, at 40,000 border agents in addition to the construction of the wall, in addition to increased measures on border security. And so his $5.7 billion request doesn't necessarily seem that extreme when you consider it's 0.1% of the budget for that agency.
It is absolutely common sense that we would do this. And let me give you another one. Obama's Border Patrol chief, Mark Morgan, in a quote, he says, "This wall will work." So Obama's former chief of Border Patrol thinks that we need a wall. And so I think that pretty much tells it all. I think the bottom line here is that Democrats do not want to listen to the truth. They have a political agenda, and they have an axe to grind with this president. They don't want to give him any kind of a win. But this president absolutely has the best interests of our nation in mind and at heart when he wants to have border security. And we've got to, and it's not just the crashing of the border. I mean, we have enormous amounts of heroin and opioids coming across the border, the southern border, where I just was. 90% of the heroin and fentanyl and other opioids are coming across that southern border. And we have 300 Americans die of overdoses of these drugs every single week. And people are dying over this. And so we have to have the Democrats have got to listen. And let me tell you something else. It is amazing to me. I think any American worth his salt with any common sense, if they knew the truth and the situation at the border, would not vote for any politician that would not want to secure this border and protect Americans and our sovereignty and our national security. That's our greatest duty when we give our oath of office, is to protect our constituents and the national security of this nation.
So not being a Washington native and being from the wide open space of Texas, how do you think the president's speech is going to be received tonight?
I think it's going to be received very well. Very well. I mean, he's been in office for over 2 years now, and this is his first address to the nation. And I think it is absolutely high time to make this happen, because let's face it, the mainstream media, the Democrats, the elite are not going to listen. They don't believe what the man says. They all they can do is demonize him and call him names. But if he takes his message directly to the American people, lays out the facts, I think folks are going to see that they know, well, they want safety and security above all of this puffery and political gamesmanship, because that's what it is. So I think it's going to be a very effective speech tonight. The president says he's not going to attack anybody. He's just going to lay out the facts and let the American people know what he's trying to do. And that's exactly what needs to be done.
I was absolutely stunned by some of the statistics in that DHS report, and I do hope he references that report tonight. But as you noted, fentanyl, just in one fiscal year alone, from 2017 to 2018, there was a 73% increase in fentanyl at the southern border and a 38% increase in methamphetamine, and also separately for heroin. So it's not just the individuals coming through, it's the materials that are coming through as well, and the fact that it's a conduit for materials for criminal activity and these opioids that are giving us essentially a weakened economy. They're helping our people to become hooked, to develop an opioid crisis. So there's really more than one reason to enforce border security at the southern wall.
I'm glad you said that, because there are so many various diverse aspects of this crisis. It's not just people coming across the border. It's not just drugs coming across the border. There is an absolute crisis of national health. We've got incurable tuberculosis. We've got people dying of overdoses.
We are out of time. We are out of time. I wish I could keep it up. But call Congress 202-225-3121 to connect with Congressman Babin. We will be right back with Attorney Jim Campbell from ADF next.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference? Now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together and advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just a tap of the screen. Sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, or read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Sarah Perry in for Tony Perkins today. Well, a federal district court has issued an order that allows Colorado Christian baker Jack Phillips of Denver to proceed with a lawsuit against the state for its hostility toward him and his religious beliefs. So, yes, you heard that right. The parties are the same, but the outcome is different. Joining me in the Washington Watch hotline is Jim Campbell, who is senior counsel with the Alliance Defending Freedom. Jim, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So I think we need to set up that there is now a Masterpiece 1 and a Masterpiece 2. And on the same day that the U.S. Supreme Court agreed to take up the original case and granted cert, someone asked cake artist Jack Phillips to create a gender transition cake. Can you explain to us a little bit of what happened?
Sure. So you're right. It was the very day that the Supreme Court announced it was going to hear Jack Phillips' first case. There was an attorney in Denver that called Masterpiece Cake Shop and asked for a cake, a custom cake with a pink interior and a blue exterior to reflect and celebrate a gender transition. Because of Jack Phillips' religious beliefs about sex and gender and the fact that God gives us our sex and that's something that we can't change or we don't choose, that's something that he wasn't able to create because it would have conflicted with his religious beliefs. So his shop declined that request, but they did indicate to the caller that they would create other cakes for them or sell them other items in the shop, but it's just that specific request was not something they could do. Nevertheless, that person filed a complaint with the state of Colorado, and instead of realizing that that complaint was an obvious setup just intended to harass Mr. Phillips, the state of Colorado picked it up and made it its own complaint and is now bringing formal charges against Mr. Phillips.
Wow. So they really don't know when to quit, do they?
They don't. I mean, the state of Colorado is intent on harassing Jack Phillips. They're intent on continuing to sue him and to turn his life upside down until they either force him to capitulate or they drive him out of business.
So we've got this district court order, and this order was issued by U.S. District Court Judge Wiley Daniel. Now, I want the listeners to know that this was a Clinton-era appointed judge from 1995. So I don't think anyone would accuse this judge of necessarily being conservative or right of center. What was the ultimate outcome in this order? What did Judge Wiley Daniel indicate in the order that he publicized last week.
Yeah, so the background leading up to it is that once the state made it clear they were coming after Jack again, Jack had no choice but to go into federal court and ask the federal court to help him and to prevent the state from continuing to target and harass him. So when we went into federal court back in August and we filed that lawsuit, the state turned around and filed a request that our lawsuit be dismissed. And so the ruling that just came out last week was the federal court refusing to dismiss our case because the federal court found that there was sufficient evidence that what the state was doing was acting in bad faith towards Jack Phillips. And so that's a really good sign for us. It's hopefully an indicator that the court will ultimately see the case our way, but nevertheless, it's certainly an indicator that we're able to proceed with our case in federal court.
So let me quote for a second from the order itself, in which Judge Daniel said that the state allows other cake artists to decline requests to create custom cakes that express messages they deem objectionable and would not express for anyone. But the disparate treatment for Jack Phillips reveals the state officials' ongoing hostility toward Phillips, sufficient to establish they are pursuing the discrimination charges against Phillips in bad faith, motivated by his religion. So they're not really pulling any punches in the official court order, are they?
No, Judge Daniel, in that sentence, made it clear that what he's seen, at least so far, in the allegations that we've brought to him is that the state is treating Mr. Phillips differently because of his religious beliefs, and they're acting in bad faith towards him because they dislike his religious beliefs.
Well, and in fact, one of the civil rights commissioners on Twitter, if I remember correctly, called Jack Phillips a hater. Is that correct?
That is correct. And the interesting thing about the way the state of Colorado sets up its procedures out there is that same commissioner who went on Twitter 5 years ago and called Jack Phillips a hater is now set to be one of the adjudicators, one of the decision makers in the case against him. And so anyone who thinks they can get a fair shake in front of someone who once called them a hater is certainly not someone I've ever met. So the fact of the matter is that fairness dictates that Mr. Phillips be able to get out from under this biased state commission and that he be able to get a fair hearing in federal court.
So really it's a free speech and due process claim in that the adjudicative process involves the same commissioners, right? So they're the accusers and the adjudicators at the same time, and there's no separation. So really, in any event, Jack Phillips would not have gotten a fair shake on this actual case.
That is absolutely what we're arguing to the court, that not only do we have anti-religious hostility towards Mr. Phillips and his religious beliefs, not only do we have an effort to force him to create expressive cakes that communicate messages in violation of his faith, but we also have what we call due process violations, where we have the same people that are acting as prosecutors and judges in the same case, and that's simply not fair.
So in the short time we have left, what is next for Jack Phillips?
The case will continue to move forward in federal court, and we are hopeful that we'll get quick relief from the federal court that will stop the state from continuing to harass and target Jack.
Jim Alliance, Defending Freedom, has done a lot of good work, continues to do good work. Thank you so much for the work that you've done on this particular case. We wish Jack Phillips the best of luck, as we have from the beginning. And ADF always has an ally in FRC. Coming up next, an increasing number of people who identify as transgender are expressing regret over their decision to undergo hormone treatment and surgery, while leftists want to fast-track young people in a so-called condition known as rapid-onset gender dysphoria, particularly prevalent among adolescents. My guest on Washington Watch is going to be Dr. Michelle Critella, next Vice President of the American College of Pediatricians. This is Sarah Perry with Washington Watch.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference? Now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together and advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just a tap of the screen. Sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication. An update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Sarah Perry in for Tony Perkins. For podcasts and more information on today's program, go to tonyperkins.com. I will begin our next segment with one of my favorite people, Dr. Michelle Critella of the American College of Pediatricians, with a quote from John Adams, "Facts are stubborn things." And some of the facts involved in this segment involved gender transition, the identity of adolescent individuals, and how quickly the medical community has bought in to the necessity to facilitate gender change. After interviewing 17 families whose adolescent daughters identify as transgender, writer Abigail Schreier, who also is an attorney with a Yale law degree, wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal that aired 2 days ago entitled "When Your Daughter Defies Biology" and believes that the medical community is far too unconditionally affirmative in its treatment of rapid onset gender dysphoria. Dr. Critella, so glad to have you here.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Sarah. I'm glad to be on.
Okay, so I want to start out by clarifying some terms here. What is the difference between traditional gender dysphoria and this new term we're hearing, rapid onset gender dysphoria?
Sure. Gender dysphoria refers to children before puberty who are uncomfortable with or confused about their sex. As an example, you may have a little boy who is questioning whether or not he may be a girl or isn't sure, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm somewhere in between, but he's not pubertal age. He hasn't gone through puberty yet. So rapid onset gender dysphoria, this describes a child who's a teenager who's already begun puberty, is going through, and all of a sudden they always knew they were a girl, or they always knew they were a boy, maybe went along with stereotypical play and dress, never had any issue like that. But as teenagers, they may have a very anxious or depressive episode and latch onto, you know what, I was transgender all along. This is why I'm miserable. And so it's this out of nowhere announcement, I'm not my sex.
So in the article, Abigail talks about the fact that there is an element of mental health to this. And unlike other social contagions, for example, cutting or eating disorders like bulimia, rapid onset gender dysphoria gets the full support from the broader medical community instead of the appropriate treatment. So in other words, if we have a patient who, for example, considers themselves to be suicidal, the answer to that is not suicide. So it seems to me that there's a bit of a political component here, particularly because this has happened. This is such a rapid about face. Is your impression the same?
Sure. You know, and this is why if we are confronted, if physicians or therapists are confronted by a child who threatens suicide for any other reason, our immediate reaction is this is a cry for help, and there is something underlying this. Okay. We don't let that suicidal child or teen dictate the treatment. This rapid onset gender dysphoria, this is the only mental illness in which, everybody jumps. They're saying they're going to kill themselves unless we affirm them with a so-called sex change, right? Let's put them on these toxic hormones. Let's give them these mutilating surgeries. It's a complete about face. And at its root, it's all about adult transgender activists pushing this as a civil rights issue, which it is not. It is not.
Well, and to back that up, student health plans at 86 colleges, she said, across the country and every Ivy League school cover these cross-sex hormones and surgery. So that's stymieing to me that these colleges are saying, we'll cover this as necessary health care and don't treat it as the type of disorder that it is by going to the root cause. That seems to me that they're really caving to the political lobby and understanding what we know about liberalism and higher education and how that trends. This is a hand in a glove.
Right. I mean, this is really, it's a top-down anti-science movement. By that, I mean, there is no science demonstrating that anyone is born transgender, period. Number one,
right.
But what's more frightening when it comes to kids is that the majority of evidence shows if you instead try to look at what's underneath their confusion about their sex and support them all the way through puberty, treat their depression, treat their anxiety, but affirm them in their biological truth, the vast majority will accept their bodies by young adulthood. Without having to be confront, you know, oh my gosh, I went through a double mastectomy or I'm on these toxic hormones for the rest of my life.
And resulting to drastic, irreversible measures. Dr. Cretella from the American College of Pediatricians. For more information on her organization, go to acpeds.org or tonyperkins.com. Coming up next, a new Gallup poll reveals that Democrats favor socialism over capitalism. So up next on Washington Watch, my guest is Marion Smith, who's the executive director of Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, explaining to us why that is. Stick around. We'll be back.
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet.
Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener, replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet and share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry and for Tony Perkins today. For more information on today's show or to grab the podcast, go to tonyperkins.com. Well, a new Gallup poll released Friday indicates vastly more Democrats favor socialism over capitalism, as do millennials. I suppose we shouldn't be surprised with the successful presidential campaign of Senator Bernie Sanders and newly minted congressional add-on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is at 29, the Democratic Socialist darling of the left. So today, to talk with me about this, I have Marion Smith, who is Executive Director of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, to discuss some of these trends with us. Marion, thanks so much for joining me on today's show.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me on.
So for the first time in Gallup's measurement over the past decade, Democrats are now more favorably inclined towards socialism than capitalism. 57% to, I believe, 47%. That's quite a substantial increase and a substantial preference. What are we owing this kind of a vast increase to?
Right. Well, I think it's predominantly two things. One is the failure to have a moral reckoning about the crimes committed in the name of communism, in the name of Marxist socialism around the world since 1917. And since the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, we've seen some 40 countries experience a Communist Party rule. And try to bring the ideas of Karl Marx into reality. And in every case, those countries either collapsed economically or turned into a totalitarian police state. In every case, every communist regime ended up killing a percentage of its own people as a matter of policy in peacetime. And the death toll since 1917 is more than 100 million innocent people killed. Mm. And so that's the deadliest ideology in human history. And unlike following World War II, when we had a Nuremberg trial and held Nazi officials accountable for the crimes against humanity that they committed in the Holocaust and elsewhere. There was no lustration, meaning the removal of former Communist Party officials throughout the Soviet Union and Central Eastern Europe. There was no Nuremberg-style trial to hold people legally accountable. And we also saw that both in the former Soviet Union and in the West writ large, there was no clear denunciation of the ideas of communism as somehow being responsible for the consequences which took place. So that's one. I think to understand that ideas have consequences and that the ideas of Marxism are the world's deadliest, and recognizing that morally and condemning it and saying that's not a path forward. That's one. Two is a failure of education, clearly. Our foundation conducted a poll with YouGov, third annual poll that was released last fall, and we found that 26% of all Americans have never been taught anything about communism in either an educational or a professional setting. And, you know, so we have a failure in the high schools and in the colleges to explain that the 20th century almost saw the destruction of the Western world and democracy. And that threat came from two sources, Nazism and communism, national socialism and international socialism, which are both on the same end of the tyranny spectrum. And so if students have not learned that communism has been tried and that communist regimes are responsible for human destruction and poverty and death on a massive scale, if they knew that, they wouldn't fall so much, I think, for the ideas of Marxism. Certainly you don't see in former communist states of Central and Eastern Europe any fascination with the ideas of socialism, because they know what that's about. Lenin said that socialism is simply the path towards communism, and Marx didn't understand any significant difference between socialism and communism. So we should be just as concerned, I think, about people saying they represent democratic socialism as we would be about people saying they represent democratic fascism.
So you mentioned education and that being sort of the secondary prong that counts for the rise in favorable views on socialism. And that to me indicates that younger demographic, that millennial demographic, and specifically the one that was addressed in the Gallup poll as well, ages 18 to 29, those Americans are at a 51% favorability rate about socialism, as opposed to a 45% positivity about capitalism, which is a 12-point decline in just a year. So I attribute this to our new congresswoman from Brooklyn, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's sort of fueling the flames here, and we have a clip to play of her.
You're talking about zero carbon emissions, no use of fossil fuels within 12 years?
That is the goal. It's ambitious. And
how is that possible? You're talking about everybody having to drive an electric car?
It's going to require a lot of rapid change that we don't even conceive as possible right now. What is the problem with trying to push our technological capacities to the furthest extent possible?
This would require, though, raising taxes.
People are going to have to start paying their fair share in taxes.
So I listen to her speak, and I hear talking about paying your fair share of taxes, which approximates to about a 70% tax rate, and her constituents in New York City could pay as much as 82% of a tax rate based on their financial demographics, but that really sort of defests 100% of national power under this Green New Deal, as it's been described, within the purview of the federal government. Clearly, it seems to me that this young woman doesn't understand how socialism works.
Right. Well, you know, I think it's important to perhaps differentiate here between what some people think they mean when they say socialism, and what socialism actually means, both intellectually and historically. The poll that I mentioned, which is in its findings very, very on point with the more recent Gallup poll, but the YouGov poll also found that more than half of Americans, when they think of socialism, associate it with welfare states in Western Europe, like Sweden and Denmark, and not with Marxist dictatorships. But that's just simply not an accurate understanding. A couple of years ago, Bernie Sanders said, when asked, "What do you mean by democratic socialism?" And he said, "Well, I mean a society like Denmark." And the Prime Minister of Denmark was very quick to respond that we are not a socialist country. We are a market economy. And we've seen over the last few decades, both in Sweden and in Denmark and other countries in Europe, sort of back and forth. There are socialist parties there who represent more of a welfare state model, but we've seen also more libertarian parties, free market parties, conservative parties who play a part in rolling back some of those more welfare state policies. If you'd like to know what socialism means when it actually is able to dictate the policy path of a country, you should look to Venezuela today, where two decades ago it was one of the wealthiest countries in the Western Hemisphere. Today, after 20 years of socialist rule, first under Hugo Chavez, whose revolution was about democratic socialism, and now under Nicolas Maduro, the dictator there, who has changed the constitution, essentially turning the country into a single-party Marxist state. The average Venezuelan has lost 20 pounds in the last 2 years because of a lack of basic foodstuffs like Tylenol and toilet paper and fruit, et cetera. There are more than 2 million displaced persons. It's beyond a natural catastrophe there, and all caused by socialist policies. So that's the face of socialism, even in the 21st century. And it is, in my opinion, very important not to normalize or trivialize the meaning of socialism, which has a very clear historical record. You know, it was the socialist revolution in Cuba that Castro led that turned that island into, an absolute dictatorship. Mao, when asked what he's doing in China, it was socialism in one country. The USSR, the Soviet Union, was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. They knew that they couldn't achieve the end goal that Marx dreamed about as communism, and so they were socialists trying to get to the end state of communists. I say, Christians go to heaven and socialists go to communism, and it is very much an irrational pseudo-religion that has a very clear historical record of destruction and death.
You know, once you reiterate the countries that have attempted socialism at one phase or another, either for a period of time or that would currently be considered socialist, it really is a list of horribles. These are countries that you would not want to emulate. They are vast infringers upon human rights, devastation, economic pitfalls. It's absolutely horrific. And I'm glad that you mentioned the distinction between Venezuela and Sweden, because for a very long time, when I would ask millennial individuals why they believed that socialism was a viable economic theory, a method of governance, their response was, well, look at Sweden. Look how profitable they are. But in fact, Denmark and Sweden, two that are often mentioned, are freer market economies than the United States is right now. In fact, they've privatized some of their own agencies' services.
Right. So that is filling out the idea that those Scandinavian countries have not adopted the philosophical precepts of socialism, which is a denial of individual liberty. According to Marx, the individual is not as important as the collective. And it is also a rejection of transcendent truth, so that neither man nor the state can be held to any higher moral authority. held accountable to any higher moral authority. And so it's back to might makes right. And in that sense, it is a very pre-civilizational political philosophy. And of course, the first political movement, the first political party that rejected God and embraced atheism. Mm-hmm. And what you see today in the People's Republic of China, in the province that houses some 10 million Uyghurs, you see that they have set up re-education concentration camps. Among the objectives there is to make them embrace atheism, because Xi Jinping, during his tenure in China, has taken the PRC back to a more Maoist, Marxist, atheistic interpretation of China's, idea of justice. And, you know, China today is arguably more powerful than the Soviet Union ever was. It is the world's largest country. It is the largest communist state in history. And China, you know, diplomatically protects and provides trade to North Korea. And then, you know, so we have two communist states there. And then we have the communist states of Laos and Vietnam and Cuba. And now Venezuela, which was not a Marxist single-party state until very recently. And in those countries, you have 20% of the world's population today. And, I'm a millennial myself. I do not want the 21st century, my future, and the future of my very young daughter, to be determined by those geopolitical actors. But the fact is, they are gaining territory in the last few years. It's not the ideas of democratic government, the rule of law, individual liberty. Those ideas are unfortunately in retreat. We see that in Crimea and eastern Ukraine. We see it in Hong Kong, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and elsewhere. And so if we're going to be able to define a better future for ourselves, we need to at least understand what was the greatest threat intellectually and materially to the free world in the last century and reject it. And certainly that begins with education and public information. But it should be unacceptable to say that communism or socialism should be the future of America. It should be as unacceptable as saying that fascism or Nazism represents a suitable path forward.
Marion Smith, I am extremely impressed by the depth of knowledge and your prowess in having covered this issue so extensively. We definitely could talk more about history, about economics, about global governance. Thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. If you want more information about Marion Smith's organization, victimsofcommunism.org is your site. You can also find the podcast on tonyperkins.com. This has been Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC, for Tony Perkins, who will be joining you again tomorrow. Thanks so much for joining us today on Washington Watch, and we will see you again soon.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.